Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Latrice Carter with Sisters Place Blog Talk Radio Show. I want to first say thank you all for tuning in and thank you for joining us. Tonight, we will be celebrating Black History with three dynamic people coming from three different areas. They are setting their mark in our history, and tonight we salute and celebrate the author, Jolie Rain from Georgia, the director, Damon L. Smith from California, and a business owner from right here in Chicago named Mae Whiteside. Get ready, sit back, and listen to the show. If you have any questions for our interviewees, please leave your interview questions on our Facebook page, and we will answer one lucky question for each of our interviewees. Well, let's get started. Our first interviewee, her name is Jolie Rain. She is an author of her first novel, Confetti. So welcome her to the show, everyone. Jolie Rain, welcome.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you for being on the show tonight. Let's jump right in and talk about your debut novel, Confetti. So how did you come up with the title of your novel, Confetti?
Well, the title came to me as I was writing it. It was untitled for so long. And as I was writing it, I was getting so many different feels from it, as in, you know, happiness and closing of the chapters and everything. And then one day I just woke up and I thought, what does all of those things mean to me? Or, you know, what signifies mm-hmm. that for me? And it would be confetti, like at a wedding or any celebration, what do you see? So for me, that is what it meant. So I was like, oh, well, since I have all those feels in this book, we're just going to give it a simple title. That way it, the reader won't know what it means until you start reading it. So
okay.
That's kind of where I came from. Yeah.
good. And with that being said, what? Tell us a little bit about the novel Confetti. Kind of give us an overview of the story.
Okay. It's a love story about a girl named Rashida, a hopeless romantic, who is, you know, older. Well, she's not really old, but in her 30s, she's a single person, and then she finds love in somebody when she least expected it. But throughout the novel, you get to see her and Terrence go through their love, new love, and then they get married, you know, and then you get to see how she is in love with Terrence and how she gets to go back and then go back to old boyfriends, old boos, you know, heartbreaks, heartaches, and happiness, too, so you can understand how she is in love with him. And then there's this little thing, honey, you know, somebody trying to be a mistress coming in, and she tries to disrupt their marriage. Then, you know, you got to see what happens. It's a little chaos, a little drama. But at the end, you know, you got to see if love wins or not. But because she's so, you know, hopelessly in love, you know, but she also doesn't want to sabotage the love, too. So you get to see her go through, you know, modern day, in my personal opinion, modern day love, 2018, 2019
love. Okay, awesome. So what type of message do you want your readers to take away after reading this story?
Well, I want everybody to read it, and, you know, I know a lot of people are going to get different things. I mean, I've been getting a lot of different feedback from it. But from this book, I want you to understand that love is easy. You know, it's not hard. You have to put in a little work for it with the right person. Everybody can accomplish that same type of love that she felt in this book. I also want them to know that if you're patient, because she was patient for a long time, if you read it, to find that perfect person, to deal with her as she dealt with him, as long as you continue to be yourself. I wrote it so that people, you know, my age could identify with it and understand that, you know, you too can have love. Whatever your past was, that was just your past. But if you, you know, if you stay true to your goals and, you know, you don't settle for it, then you too can find whatever that happiness is. It may not be love and marriage. It may be something different, but you can reach whatever it is you're trying to reach.
Okay, awesome. Now, would you say that this story is a little personal for you, or is there like something, any part of the story relatable to you at all that you're like learning from that you're sharing with the audience?
Oh, yeah, it's very personal for me. It started off as an assignment from my therapist for me to describe what happiness looked like. And one day I woke up with a date in mind about what happiness looked like, and I wrote it out, and then it turned into a story that I couldn't let go of. And for me, it was definitely something that I feel like I'm writing down everything I want, you know. You're foreshadowing, in a sense, whatever it is that I want. Like, what did the drama look like for me at this age? It didn't look like, you know, love, sex, and drugs, jail time, and fighting, and chaos. It looked like something different. So for me, it was very relatable for me and everybody my age and the people I'm around, and also for anybody else that wants to read it. So I took a little bit from life and put it into books.
Okay. Hey, that's how we learn. That is exactly how we learn. Everyone has someone who has influenced their writing. Can you give us three literary influencers that inspired your writing and why?
I don't have three, but I can give you two. I don't have three. I read a lot, but I know two staples for me as I grew up reading was Fly Girl by Omar Tyree and Sister Soulja, Coldest Winter Ever. And now that I'm writing this, as you know, thinking about that question made me say, oh, wait, maybe that's what I'm doing, like a coming of age, but you're a little bit older, talking about, you know, your life. Back then, those two books was kind of what me and my friends read, the what we can identify with, what you could see around you, different type of relationships and, you know, those type of things. So those two people, Omar Tyree and Sister Soulja, before those two books from, you know, when I was maybe in middle school up until maybe until I got maybe 24, 25, I could identify with those. Mm-hmm. So I do realize now in writing this book, that's what I did, was to write something current for me that other people my age could identify with. So I would use those two people, Sister Soulja and Omar Tyree.
Okay, great, great, great. Now, a lot of people, you know, when they look to other published authors like yourself, being new, they always come for advice, always seeking advice. What advice do you have for others who dream of writing, books, and, you know, they have a story, but they don't know how to get it out there? What advice would you give them?
The first thing I would say to do is just do it. You have to just jump out on faith. I had this in my mind for a long time. And until I just stepped out to say, I want to do it, you have to put it out there, speak those words and say it. Just do it. Even if you have to research a little bit to figure it out. The next thing I would also say is get a mentor. I have a really, really dope mentor in Sherry McCray, shout out to her, who held my hand. You know, you have to find somebody who knows what it is you're trying to do, and somebody who has done it, and then see if they'll help you walk that walk. Because if I didn't have her, I don't know that we would even be having this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us, now that you've written your first book, what is next for you? Are you writing another book? What's going on?
I am currently trying to sit down and get my second book underway. But since I've been getting so much feedback from this one, I'm trying to figure out which way I want to go with the next one. I don't know if I want it to be a sequel. I don't know, you know, which way I'm trying to go, but I have to sit down and do it. But what I really am focused on currently is getting my brand together, getting my name out there, networking a whole lot more, getting my social media out there to everybody, not just, you know, everybody that I know, but get it out to the masses. And I want to start my own book club for indie authors like myself because sometimes we don't have that outlet as, you know, a big published author would. If you, you know, I'm trying to reach out to them and get a couple of books under, you know, my belt for me and like my friends and then their friends, and then it could expand to something bigger than that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So how, before I ask you that, with this being Black History Month, what does Black History mean to you?
Black history means to me, it just means, like, it means that we, you know, we came a long way from everything that the struggle, it could, you know, the struggle, the celebration. It means, you know, being innovative, not just, you know, not being held down, not being tied down, but, you know, flourishing as a black people. I do see a lot of history in everything that we do as a black people. And as a black woman, you know, it to me it means, you know, going beyond what they told us we could do a long time ago. I don't like to, okay, you know, reflect on the past and, you know, the slavery, and I like to go beyond that to say, oh, everybody who broke barriers and broke walls down so that I can be an author, so that I can have a voice, so that I can be me and be expressive without there being any, you know, any feet on my neck to say, no, you can't do that. Freedom, expression,
absolutely,
newness, greatness. That's what that looks like to
okay
me.
Okay. Okay. So if you could collaborate with two authors, who would they be and why?
The first person I would say is Michelle Obama, the greatest. that was, I mean, you know, she's new at it, but listen, that's the first person I would want to collaborate with. And the second person I would, and this is touchy, but I would like to collaborate with Zane. I read a lot of
okay
books, you know, and I would mm-hmm like to see where, because in my book it gets, you know, it can go Zane-ish. So I would like to see how, if, you know, me and Zane got together, what that would look like.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Now, why did you say why you were selecting those two people?
Oh, yeah. Well, Michelle Obama, because she's really dope. I would like to, you know, get to know her outside of, you know, the president's wife
mm-hmm
type of mm-hmm thing. Just, you know, to see, you know, like the sister girl type of thing, like collaborate
right
with her on
mm-hmm
that, to get a sister girl, like, you know, coming of age, maybe, you know, to get where she was at my point in life, to see if we could do
absolutely
something like that, something a little bit spicy, you know, outside of, you know, the prim and proper, what she has to do. Give me a little bit more than that.
Okay, okay. And then Zane, you want to collaborate with her, why?
Oh, yeah, just because Zane is definitely spicy, definitely
okay
hot, definitely, you know, can give you a R-rated vibe, just to see, you know, how deep, you know, like not like,
mm-hmm,
like not too raunchy, but I would like to see my mind and that mind, you know, who knows.
Okay, absolutely. So how can our audience and our readers across the world connect with you and follow you around on social media?
On Instagram, I am Jolie Love Rain, Jolie, Jolie, Luv, Rain, Reine. You can also follow me on Facebook under Jolie Rain. You can purchase the book on my website, authorjolierain.com. And to get to me directly, you can email me at info.authorjolierain@gmail.
Okay. Well, there you guys have it. Be sure to go and check out her book, Confetti. Go visit her website at Author Jolie Rain. Exactly how we're saying it, authorjolierain.com. She was also featured in our magazine for our first issue of 2019, the January-February issue. You can definitely pick that up and read more about her interview in our magazine as well. And you can get your own print copy delivered right at your door. The link is on our Facebook page, and we will also include the link to her website on our Facebook page as well, so you can go over there and learn more about her and definitely follow her on social media. Jolie, thank you so much for coming onto the show tonight. Feel free to listen to the rest of the show tonight.
I will be
a blast.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Oh, you are so welcome. In the meantime, before our next interview, I want to share some Black History music by one of my favorite artists. She was on the show a year ago. Her name is Shamia, and we're going to play one of her songs. So you guys sit back, listen to her, this beautiful song, and we'll come back with our next interviewee.
Mm-hmm. the love a mother has for a baby. Even when they're grown, they can do no wrong. And what I feel for you's no exception. We made a vow to say, come what may. There's been times I let you down. Sometimes it was both our fault. But you never dared to change. And your passion stayed the same for me, yeah. I just expected you to leave me. Cause the human in me didn't want to change. We didn't come into this thing squeaky clean, baby. But the nature of our love washes every stain away. There's been times I let you down. Sometimes it was all my fault. But you never dared to change. And your heart stayed the same. Keeps you going. It makes you feel so good. Deep down inside. Oh, oh, oh. You are my redemption. Cause we are not perfect at all. But we love someone. Conditional. Nothing will ever.
That was Heartbeat by Shamia Crawford. That was a beautiful song, and what a way to celebrate Black history by sharing a beautiful song by Shamia Crawford. If you are not familiar with Shamia Crawford, you definitely want to check her out. She's right there out of Atlanta, Georgia. Well, guys, welcome back to the show. We are about to introduce our next interviewee. He is an indie director. He has a new series that he is working on called Black, and we're going to be talking to him to learn more about the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Damian L. Smith. Hey, Damian.
Thank you. Thank you. We meet again. How are you?
I am doing well. How you doing?
Everything is excellent. Life is great. Life is great. So excited to have you back on. I appreciate you.
Oh, you are so welcome. You know, it's Black History Month. So, you know, we have to celebrate our talented brothers and sisters doing greatness. That's what we do.
I appreciate it. This is project number two. What a total Black behind the camera crew. Cast. The cast is mixed, but yeah, this is the second time we were able to do it. So for Black History Month, I think that's fitting. We did it. We did it right. We did it right.
And that's right. There you go. So why don't you tell us about your new television pilot titled Black? What is that about?
I'll sum it up quick. It's basically a spinoff of if you took modern day if you took Romeo and Juliet and made it a modern day thing. That's all it is basically.
Mm-hmm.
You have two rival families that have over, let's say, a century of bad blood. Their kids,
mm-hmm.
by a strange term of events, end up together in a relationship, and it doesn't go well after that point. But the good part about it is they come from different walks of life. You got our
mm-hmm.
main character played by Sean Riggs as Black, and his family is pretty much from the street side of things. Their family's been in the underground
mm-hmm.
street scene for all that time. And Tiffany Stromile, whose family is pretty much corporate. So when you have
mm-hmm.
these two come together, it's metal sharpening metal. Her skill set along
mm-hmm.
with his skill set creates something that's really powerful. And that's what I wanted to do. It's
okay.
not just another shoot 'em up random project. This is something that shows. I mean, Tiffany's trying to start her own cryptocurrency. And Black has
okay.
capital. And I'm not going to give you too much. But it's it's an amazing story, and I have an amazing cast like Tiffany, who was played by Christian Victoria. She nailed it. She's doing a great job. And, you know, every project has to have a super 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 villain. So we have Detective Raymond West, that's played by Tory B. Lawrence. That when you see him in public, you're probably going to want to punch him. But that means he's doing his job. He's bad. We wrote him bad, and he's bringing stuff to the character. Yes, when you see him in public, you're like, oh, I hate him. But he plays the role so well, it's like, oh, you enjoyed it. So
mm-hmm.
the whole cast is doing amazing, the whole cast. So that's a great one. So
okay.
I'm happy
okay.
about Black.
So, awesome, awesome.
So how did the show get its name? How did you come up with the name for the show?
Nice. So the original working title, right, was called
mm-hmm.
Blackwell Stromile, because I'm wordy. When we do over
mm-hmm.
when we do a lot of projects, people be like, dude, you gotta really bring it down. That's too much because you're wordy. So I get pulled to the side by a friend. And he's going, Blackwell Stromile. You're going to call it that? I'm like, yeah, it's the Blackwell Stromile. Well, he said, who's the story about? I said, Black. He said, that's, nah, you know, Capricorn males don't like change. So I'm sitting here going, nah, man, we got to roll with the Blackwell Stromile. And then I started looking at it going, Black, because it's a wonderful play on words. Everybody who sees
mm-hmm.
it thinks, oh, it must be Black people, it's Black. But it's just a play on the name. There's Asian cast, there's Black cast, there's White cast. So it has nothing to do with just, oh, it's Black. It's Black is our main character played by Sean Riggs. So it's just a play on words,
okay.
bait and switch. You know,
that's
it.
Okay.
It worked.
So it worked. So it's a TV. So you shot it for a television pilot.
Mm-hmm.
When will you know more about when it'll be available for us to see it? What's the next thing?
Well, five days of pickups. So we shot 80 to 85% of it. We're going in March to shoot the last 4 to 5 days. It's four episodes. We didn't just shoot one. We shot four.
Okay.
So get you guys hooked, get you hooked good. If you see the tone, you know my production value. I like my production value high. So
mm-hmm.
we didn't spare any. here's my thing. I don't want to talk your head off, but here's my thing. With technology now, there's no reason why a production shouldn't rival anything else on TV or anything else. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you produce something, and you could check me if I'm saying anything you feel is wrong. But for some reason, people
mm-hmm.
feel like whenever people of color do a production, it's supposed to be lackluster unless it's picked up. But I feel
mm-hmm.
that you should be able to play your stuff next to anything on ABC, any other station. And with technology now and some resourcefulness, it should rival it. So that was my thing. So I'm not going to lie and say I haven't spent. I put a lot of money into this. But if you see the tone and the quality of it, this makes a tone look like a B or a C level project. It's very
okay.
It's very sharp. It's very sharp, and
okay.
That's why we're taking our time with it. So it'll be ready by the summer. All four episodes will
okay.
be ready by the summer.
Okay.
Like I said, we're knocking out the rest of it. And my next project, I want to shoot in Atlanta because I went to Atlanta and did some networking, and I fell in love.
Okay.
I don't know. If you go to Atlanta and see how the networking is out there.
I've lived in Atlanta for like 9 years. I know.
Okay. That's the new Hollywood. I spent 3 or 4 days out there. And the time that I was out there in Buckhead and a couple other places networking, the cigar shops, and just really enjoying it, that is the spot. If you want to get,
mm-hmm.
that's the new Mecca.
The
so
new Black Hollywood.
I'm really,
mm-hmm.
yes, it is. And the people were so hungry, and just like the people I met, I was like, I have to do something out here. So I met with Kelly Price when I was out there, and you know, we talked about one project, and she really enjoyed it. And I talked to other people as well when I was out there, and it was like, this is just, I have to, there's no way I can't shoot here. So I'm finishing up Black Here,
mm-hmm.
the 4 episodes. Once it goes in the post, I'm on an airplane. I'm back out to Atlanta. And, yeah, I'm just excited about it because I've never seen, and Cali is different. And Cali, I mean, I
mm-hmm.
love, this is home, don't get me wrong. But in Cali, it was just, it's just more, you have to fight to get to.
Is it more politics in California?
It's more politics.
Versus
there
Atlanta?
You know, it's way more politics. Atlanta, I was sitting in this, these people just kept coming in. I'm like, that's such a, this is crazy. And when you sit down and talk
mm-hmm.
to them and you give them the concepts and they see what you did, they're open. What do you need? I got the locations.
Mm-hmm.
I got this. I got that. So I said, there's no way I can't come back. So I'm really considering about doing The Block or Annabelle at in Atlanta. I love it.
Okay. I love that. Now, you've been in the industry for a while, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
there are always aspiring producers and directors and writers. They want to get
yes.
into your industry. So can you
yeah.
share some advice and explain with those listeners, you know, the process for pitching television series or shooting a short
okay.
feature film or even a full feature film? Because I know, you know, this is your area of expertise. So can you
okay.
share with those listeners?
Sure. I'm going to put one out here that's going to sound crazy. Of course, relationships are king, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
don't wait for a circumstance, create it. So you're emailing your favorite person, right? You're looking at Ava,
mm-hmm.
you're looking at all these folks blowing, right? Oh, I'm going to get with Ava,
right.
and she's going to do this. Ava has a million people hitting her daily, right? So
right.
I would say, instead of putting your circumstances on someone else, say, I'd be resourceful. I've seen people make killer projects with iPhones. I've seen people make killer projects with some crazy technology. So create your circumstance. If you want to do something, be resourceful. Find out what to do to make your script stand out, or find a script that's excellent. If you want to be a director, hey, this guy's already on the roll. Let me partner with him to do his project.
Mm-hmm.
and create something using the resources you have to bring the people to
mm-hmm.
you. Because if you sit around and you have a wonderful project in your house, then you have the dopest project in your house. You're telling everybody about it, and you're telling everybody's going, okay, so what are you going to do? Oh, I'm just waiting for I'm going to send this stuff to Tyler, and I'm going to see if they get back. Tyler's getting a million offers a day. Everybody's trying to get to Tyler,
mm-hmm.
right? Create something
right.
that they can see. Create your following, and make them, when you come to them, say, hey, I got a million people following me right now. I got my own built-in
mm-hmm.
audience. Let's work. As opposed to,
mm-hmm.
I don't have anything, but I got a good idea, and that puts you in a whole different negotiation bracket. So my thing would be create your circumstances, be resourceful, And chess, if you think it's good enough, then it's not. It needs to exceed. So when somebody says, oh, that's good, it's probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. Somebody goes, somebody looks at your stuff and goes, when somebody looks and goes, oh, damn, woo, right? Then it's like, okay,
right.
I got something. I brought people in here that are, Sean Harrison used to play on Family Matters. He played Waldo, right?
Yeah.
He was a really good friend of mine. He actually helped me tighten up the script. And he doesn't bite his tongue. So when I brought Sean on board, I knew it would help the script be sharper. And when I brought Sean in and let him watch the footage of what we shot, when he said, okay, this is looking good. Okay. When I could get him, that's my guy, because he told me about the tone. He said, yeah, watch the tone. Go to the film festival, and I tell you all the problems I have with it. I'm like, damn. Right? Right? So we go through nine festivals and win stuff. Then we sit down, and I talk to Sean, and Sean's like, here's my problem. Bam, 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 right in the chest, right? So get around people that can help you exceed, create your own circumstances, make sure that it's not lackluster, make sure that it looks great, and do the best that you can do. If that's all you can do. If you do the best and you put a good foot forward and you get it done, kudos. That's the advice I give. Create your circumstances. Don't cut corners. And understand, like your parents, like parents tell black children, you have to do two or three times as good as everybody else, right? But it's true.
Yes, you
it's
do.
Very true.
It's true. It is.
It's true. It's true. I can't deny it. If I walk in with a project that's killing it, and let's say the other kid walks in with something that's like average, he's going to get looked at first. But you just need to make sure that when your stuff is considered, it's like, okay, this is mind-blowing. And that's what it is. That's what it is.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Okay.
So
now I've asked everyone tonight about Black History. What does Black History mean to you?
Black history, first of all, let me go off on a tangent. Black history is every day. Black history should be every day. You should walk in confidence, know, being proud of who you are, learn your heritage, learn where you come from, and your history did not start with slavery. Understand that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But being that every time you walk outside, Black history means to me that you know your history or you're learning it. And every time you walk outside, you're representing your entire race. So Black history to me means be the best person you can be, because you're not just representing you. Every decision you make out and about represents an entire culture. And I know that's a lot of pressure, but it's true. So everybody who paved the way before us, even in film, you know, Oscar Michaud, going way back. Going back to that era all the way to Spike Lee just now getting an Oscar, you know, things of that nature. You have to look at that stuff and know that these people paved the way and to make it better for you. So the people before you, give them the respect they deserve by doing your best in the role that they paved for you. That's what Black history means.
Mm-hmm.
Look back at the history so that the present can be improved. Don't do things to pull us backwards.
Absolutely. I like that. Now, I know you touched base on a couple of the cast members that's in Black, but can you name some other cast members that will be in the series Black?
Yes. We talked about Sean Riggs. We talked about Christian Victoria. We talked about Raymond, Detective Raymond, which is Tori B. Lawrence. We have Anika McFaul, who actually just got a really cool role on 50 Cent show, The Oath. And she's been in, we've worked together on past projects. We have Josh Han, very good Korean actor, who actually came on. He's going to throw you, because when you see the series, we have some of the brothers on there speaking in Korean. It's pretty impressive to watch.
Really?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it's like, Alexandre Chin. Oh my God. On the Cosby Show, there was a guy that played Denise's husband, Mr. Phillips. I don't know if you remember him. Do you remember?
I remember
he was a military
guy.
Joseph C. Phillips. Yes. Yeah, there you go. Joseph C. Phillips, he came on. So he did an excellent job. I can't believe I forgot to talk about him. Mary Mackey. And it's a very mixed cast. It's a very mixed cast.
Okay.
Nigel Nelder. It's a lot of people you're going to see on there, and you'll be like, oh, okay, that's cool. But, Cheyenne. Siobhan, I don't know if you have this thing in Chicago, but they're doing some really big poster ads about family and things of that nature. When you see some of these faces, you'll see them from different ads and things of that nature, too, because people are out here really working.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
It's a very big cast, which made it a very sometimes we bite off something and people warn us like, dude, you know, this is a pretty wild swing you take. But some of us are crazy enough to take the swing and we pulled it off. So it was a big swing. Like when we got halfway through, I was like, oh, okay, well let's keep going. And we got it all done, but it was a very big swing. And, it's an amazing project. It is a very big cast, but the main players are definitely stated. And my executive producer and person I always work with, Rhonda Conley, who's been rocking with me since, that's like my right arm, basically, since the first project I did with Charles Xander Peterson to now. Without her, you know, a lot of the stuff. She's kind of like the brains behind a lot of times. She's the one that tells me, like, you might be biting off more than you could chew. And then I say, okay, and I bite it off anyway. So,
you don't listen.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, God, don't worry about nothing. And then we back in savior mode. But everything worked out. And the whole cast is smoking. Like, the whole cast is amazing. And, I don't know if you looked on the page. Did you see the stunt coordinator, Dylan? I had a whole thing where he had the stunt coordinator.
I did go on the page. I was being nosy, snooping around, and checking out some of the posts. Yes.
As you should.
And I do see it is a diverse cast. I like that.
Yes, very diverse
cast. I like for us not to be known as, you know, that stigma. Oh, it's a black director.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody else of another ethnicity on it. I like that. I'm grateful that you're definitely keeping it.
And I went out and did it accurate. Because, you know, a lot of time when we do go out and cast, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to get off my soapbox. What we'll do a lot is we'll write something, but we don't really know how the other person talks. So it's like it's the opposite. If you have a guy who's never been to the hood, write a hood tale. It's like, that's not how we talk. That works in reverse.
Right.
So when you have somebody who may not know how a person in law enforcement talks, but they're writing for them, sometimes that happens too. So I had we went through and made sure that everything was accurate. So Adam Pilver, who plays Christian Victoria's Tiffany's boss, he killed it in one of my first projects. All these people had to come to the table and make sure that they help you. When you say certain things, you'd be like, say that again? I like the way you said that better. Let's roll with that. That's more natural. And we had the script to go in, change that up. That's the script now. So, you know, it's a diverse cast, and it's smoking. I guarantee you it won't disappoint. This one's really... It's a nice piece. You'll be hooked.
Well, let our listeners and audience know how they can stay connected with you and how they can stay connected with the series Black as well. Any other projects you have going on?
Okay. Black the series is under that name on Instagram, Black_the_series. We also have it as Black on Facebook, which is building those pages now. I can be contacted or I can be follow me at Damian L. Smith. That's Damion, Mama's Creative. Damian L. Smith, and I'm also director Damian L. Smith on Instagram. And My Twitter, you guys, come on my Twitter and help me out. My Twitter is horrible. Like, my Twitter game is horrible. Director D. Smith, it's horrible. I don't get it. Somebody please, like, if you can, like, email me some Twitter instructions, like, how to get the Twitter game up. My Instagram is looking good, Director D. Smith. My Facebook is looking cool, but my Twitter game, I need you guys to help. Go on and join
me
at Director
D. Smith. Are you using hashtags on Twitter? Are you using hashtags on Twitter? Because you got to use hashtags.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
School me. Yeah. Start using hashtags and start, you know, when you go to your Twitter page, log in from your laptop, and you have to do it from your laptop in order to see the trending hashtags. And you want to try to capture it. Yeah. So you can draw that audience to you. And when you're sending out tweets, you know, make sure you're using your hashtags and make sure they're popular hashtags, you know, and you can create some that's unique to yourself. And that's the Sisters Creative Media in me.
Did you guys hear that?
Giving you some tips. Yes.
She's giving us game, but I'm sitting there going, how do you get people to join? How did Matthew Cherry get to 10 million? You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever. Like, now I see it's okay. It's hashtag game, right?
I'll give you a little secret. Some people do buy Twitter. Some people do buy their followers, and Twitter actually frowns upon it. But some people do buy their followers. There's an app.
Are they authentic? Are they authentic followers? Because I don't want to buy followers. I want followers who are engaged.
Right.
You know, I don't want to buy them.
That's why
you
do it organically. Yes. That's why you do it organically.
Okay.
You don't want the fake followers, because your fake followers aren't going to engage with you.
Exactly. I don't want to be on there if I can't connect with the people. So, okay, so everybody, hashtags. All right, I got that. Okay, go on the laptop.
Yeah, you
got to
learn to use them hashtags. Yes.
Plus, these phone screens got me. It's almost glass of time anyway with these phones. So, laptop, I welcome. Good.
You can do it on your phone, though, too. But, you know, everybody, I just want you guys to make sure you go to his Facebook page, Damon L. Smith. And follow him, connect with him. If you have any questions for him, you can drop those either in our Facebook page, on our Facebook page, or most definitely on his Facebook page. He'll answer any questions that you need.
Yes.
You know, for all
aspiring
directors and writers.
Yeah, you talk to me, I talk
back.
I'm not one of the snooty ones. I'm not one of the snooty ones. No, I'm not snooty.
Yeah, that's what I love about Damon. He will respond to you. So. And be respectful. Please be respectful. Let's not be disrespectful. Let's be respectful of all of our interviewees.
All right.
With Damien,
I
appreciate you. I will drop your flyer in our page and, you know, to share with everyone.
You so
and, you know, like I always tell you, keep me abreast and we will always share and help you promote. So, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah, thank you for having it. Thank you for having me back on, and I appreciate you.
Oh, you are so welcome. You are so welcome. Well, feel free. There will be a replay available, and we are going to continue on with our show with our next guest. Thanks, Damien.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and be well.
All right. All right now.
Bye-bye.
All right. All right, everybody. We are on schedule, on time. I just want to do a little housekeeping first. Let us know if you want to get some branding, branding and media exposure. Contact Sisters Creative Media. Visit our website at www.sisterscreativemedia, or send your email request to sisterscreativemediainfo@gmail.com, and they will be very happy to talk with you and assist you in getting more media exposure and branding strategies to help grow your exposure for your business, for your books, for your film projects, and more. Up next on our show is a dynamic woman. She is right here from Chicago. She is the CEO of a 100% Black-owned engineering firm. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, May Whiteside. Hi, May. Hi, how are you? I am well. How you doing? I'm doing fabulous. I am excited to be a part of what you are doing to give exposure to Black firms during the awesome Black History Month.
Oh, you are so welcome. And thank you for tuning into the whole show. I love it. I love it.
Yes.
Yes. And you know, we had to drop a little Black history music from one of my favorite artists. So I think everyone was like, oh, wow, she, we didn't know she was playing music. But we do from time to time. So we'll jump right into your interview. I was very impressed. And I'm very proud. I always love seeing Black-owned businesses. You have a Black-owned 100% women-run engineering firm, CKL Engineers LLC. Tell us what makes your firm different from any other engineering firm.
Well, what makes CKL unique and different from other firms is that, number one, we are 100% Black woman-owned in Chicago. That is one of our biggest unique qualifiers. The second thing is I make sure that my engineers understand the business procurement process all the way down to executing the project, where other firms pretty much they get larger and larger. They parcel out the tasks. The engineers don't really get the full picture of how the firm acquired the project. And the other piece is just our community outreach. And the goal in that and part of the corporate, you know, social responsibility as you can't be something you cannot see. So I ensure that I am in the community. I'm not sending people on my behalf or engineers on my behalf personally there. Speaking in schools, whether I am participating at the Museum of Science and Industry's Black Creativity that happens every year, or I typically don't turn down requests to go into schools or talk about workforce development when it comes to African-American engineers. I do not turn that down. So I think that because I spend a lot of time in that area and the more I become visible in the community, the more they get comfortable with seeing civil engineers. And I will tell you this, I do that because African-American students are not entering. When I say not, I don't know why this is. I kind of think I know why it is. But we're not pursuing civil engineering. We're not pursuing civil engineering. And civil engineering, there's five branches of civil engineering. I focus on one of them, which is transportation engineering, which is the construction engineering or design of local roads and streets and airports. And you typically don't see us sisters out there. There's few of us here, right here in Chicago, but I make it a focus because my pipeline is vanishing in front of my eyes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't push it a lot in schools, and I know that's very good that you're actually keeping your face in the school so you can tap those young minds, you know, encourage them to come into civil engineering to, you know, hey, check us out. You know, this might be something you want to do. That is very good. That is very good. What projects are you currently working on that you can talk about with our audience?
Sure. Right here in Chicago, as you guys may know, and it's been coming up in politics quite a bit because we're in election cycle, but there is a program where aldermen choose to submit projects to improve their to do infrastructure improvements in their ward. And I'm part of a consultant organization that provide construction engineering and inspection and design work for a lot of the local roads and streets in the city. That is a huge project. The other project I like to talk about that we're working on is we are a part of the
Connect Alliance program out at O'Hare, the new O'Hare 21 project everyone talks about. I will share that I actually have worked on runway 10 left. So I'm actually a civil engineer that worked at O'Hare 10 years ago, providing geotechnical engineering and inspection for all the soils that go beneath the taxiway, runway, and service road areas. So that was a that was pretty interesting. Yep.
Okay, go ahead. Awesome. So what is the current, I know you had talked about, what is the current procurement process for Black engineering firms, and are you advocating changing anything to better the advantages or opportunities for Black engineers, particularly Black women?
So the first part of the question. So the current procurement process, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's an area I'm focused in, but the current procurement process for engineering firms, we all follow the qualifications. Well, they call it QBS, which is qualifications-based selection, meaning our qualifications are examined and reviewed by the local agencies prior to awarding us the engineering contract, meaning we have to show competent, proficient professionals with civil, with any engineering discipline, degreed. We have to show that we've taken the proper materials engineering courses for the materials that are brought onto site, meaning we have to understand how asphalt is placed, concrete is placed, soil, landscaping, underground utilities, cabling, and all that stuff. Like, we have to actually show that not only do we have the background in it and the training for it, but that we've actually had past project experience, which shows that, hey, you know, we've worked on 6 or 7 or 20 of these type projects, or these are the sort of projects that we've been involved in since inception. So that provides the basis for the qualifications to be reviewed and accepted. And that's for all engineering firms in the state. But in terms of the advocacy for black engineers, particularly Black women, is I, along with another colleague, Sean Coleman, created a draft document to address that particular issue. And that document I presented to the Illinois Legislative Foundation to kind of look at the procurement code. I personally feel that African-American women engineering firms in Illinois should be tracked separately. We should be protracted out of the pool, because what happens is if less than 2%, and this is still on the rounder, and hopefully this changes under the current administration, the Pritzker administration, but if 2% of the contract work goes to African-American in the category, what does that really say about Black women engineering, you know, firms, construction engineering firms, architect firms? What does that say? I feel that in order to better provide those, to uplift our community, we need to see where those dollars are going, not just the general W category for women or the general MBE category for minority engineers, but how much work is really going to Black women.
That
is something that may face a couple of challenges, but I think with enough noise, I think we can get it done. And that's the biggest advocacy piece that's troubling in the state. It's very troubling. Quite often, because we're blindsided by a lot of the decision makers that are, you know, determining who gets what work and when and where.
Absolutely. So you are celebrating 10 years in business. Congratulations. That's, you know, for a Black-owned business, for a small minority business, for a business run by a woman, that's a big, that is a big milestone. That is really a big milestone. So congratulations on
celebrating
10 years.
Yes.
Oh, yay. You are welcome. and in that 10 years, what would you say were some valuable lessons that you learned being in business right here in Chicago?
I didn't get political early enough.
Mm.
You know,
okay.
Prior to starting the engineering firm, I actually worked for the Chicago Department of Transportation for about 6 years. And in that
okay.
6 years, I didn't realize, you know, that some of those connections I would need when I started my firm. One piece of advice, if you're working full-time in your industry and you're thinking you're going to go off on your own and start your own business within the same industry with the same people, your work starts at 5 p.m. You need to socialize between 5 and 10:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. In
absolutely.
Order for people to get to know you, what you do, your habits, you get to know them, what they think, their habits, who they know, who's in their circle that you might need, the networking part, you know. And I will say early when I started the firm, my son was about 6 or 7 years old like that. So when I would leave work, I'd go straight home. I didn't network with anybody. I zoomed straight home because, you know, homework, grocery shopping, putting dinner on the table, and I missed those networking opportunities that being in business here in Chicago, it's just all about the network. That was the valuable lesson that I would tell somebody else right now.
You know, and that's, you know, and I'm finding that true for just about any business, even with mine as well. So you really do need to network. You really do have to network and get out there so that your people can get to know you, get to know who you are, and they know what you're doing, you know, so you can have some allies in your
circle. And learning how to, and you know what else, too? Learning how to play golf is probably the biggest thing you could do for your career.
Really? Oh, wow.
You better go golf.
Go golfing.
Go golf. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I'm gonna try it. Look, I do the little miniature golf with the little thing at the little park thing. Not the same.
Because you need longevity. I mean, this is a golf is a it's an all day game. That's a full 8 hour work day, and you gotta work and hit that ball and all those holes throughout the entire golf course, and you can't be. You know, you got to be a little bit active, like athletically active, because you got to stand up and hit the ball for hours.
For hours.
Agonizing.
Oh, my
hours.
Goodness. All right. So I know you offer, we had briefly discussed mentoring in your via email, and I wanted to definitely touch on that because I don't see a lot of that nowadays. Do you offer the mentoring to young women who major in school as engineers and those who want to start their own firm? If so, what can these young women expect from you?
What they can expect from me in terms of mentoring is consistency. There is a lot to be said when someone is always actively interested in your career. I didn't have that at first, you know, because I would tell you in civil engineering, there's not a lot of women that look like me.
Right.
I'd say, when I graduated from Illinois Institute of Technology, there were only two other African-American women graduating with me in my class. I understand a bit of the networking challenges that women have. So in terms of mentoring to young women who are in school, I offer internships. Every once in a while, I would do a fall internship, summer internship, you know, while you're in school, and you get to kind of learn the industry. And I always focus on learning the business of the industry. And the other thing I do, I have a public profile on Facebook under Macy Whiteside, PE, and it's called Mentor Moments with May. And I would give, unfiltered business advice from my kitchen. And I would literally get into, like, things I've learned. Just, you know, away from my staff in the comfort of my home. And some of them watch me on Facebook and I'm like, don't look at me. But I give unfiltered advice real time. You can literally type your comments and I'm answering them as I'm reading them. Like, you get real time instant advice.
That is good. That is really good. Our students need that today. Students and our young women and men who are going into the workforce for the first time as well. Having a business means legacy. What does legacy mean to you?
I've grappled with that. Legacy. You know, that's such a tough thing. It's like, I could say in terms of legacy, it's what, how many engineering firms have I inspired to be created because they met me? You know, they see me, you know, working and then on social media and then I'm working and then I'm networking. How many other Black women millionaires have I created? That's my legacy.
Have I made at least
2 to 3 firms? Yeah. If I haven't done that, then I selfishly did not share my gift. I didn't share or impart any wisdom about what it means to be in business and all the BS that you have to put up with. It's not an instant game. This is a long game. How many Black female millionaires did I create because I decided to start my own firm? That's my legacy.
Absolutely.
I want people to be able to point and say, I did it because she did it. And that's how I'm able to cement my legacy.
Okay. I like that. So what advice or wisdom can you give a little Black girl or college or graduate student dreaming of becoming a civil engineer someday?
What advice? Google is your best friend. If I had to go back right now, I probably would have said while I was in college, network with my professors who have created business owners in the local area. So case in point, I went to Illinois Institute of Technology. I graduated in 1999. And in the late 90s, I saw my lab mates, my structural engineering classmates go off and have drinks with the professor. I didn't even know they were doing that. Like, you can go and have alcohol. I'm just saying, like, alcohol or coffee or whatever.
Yeah.
They were asking their professors they were with their professors off campus. So I later found out that this professor knew one engineering firm owner who has an office at a downtown high-rise overlooking Wacker Drive, has a million-dollar engineering firm here, has a brand presence in Ireland. I didn't know, like, the people he graduated were vice presidents, presidents, entrepreneurs that started these civil engineering firms. And had I known that going off and having a drink with my classmates, Dawn and Jerry, and I mean, they didn't even tell me or disclose to me that they actually were off campus having these, because they're not going to tell you. They were having informal networks. Yeah. So when I graduated from college, I had no job to go to. When they graduated from college, they went to their favorite students' company right downtown. I didn't even know they could do that. wisdom, that would be the wisdom that I would give. But dreaming of becoming a civil engineer, I would say for civil engineers, we improve our local communities. For example, with transportation projects, whether it's a new roadway, a new rail line, a new what have you, that transportation projects, they improve the local economy. So if you're interested in improving, like South and West Sides, we see